man. There's a beverage here, huh?
Does anybody here know how many times I've had to watch Funny Lady?
I'm gonna get that gun of mine, and I'm gonna change you from a rooster to a hen with one shot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Who Shot Ya? I am your host, Ify Wadiwe. We are joined by producer and film festival programmer, Drea Clark. Drea, what's good?
Okay, what's good is civic responsibility, because this bitch had jury duty this week.
Oh, so you actually got...
I did. So I got the summons for the week of, and then you're supposed to, like, check the website or call in the night before. And so for Monday, it was like, don't come in. And I was like, oh, sweet, maybe I won't. Psych. Yeah. Tuesday, it was like, please report here. I did do the online orientation, which everyone should do. It shocks me that everyone doesn't. It's like an 11-minute YouTube video in LA anyway. And then you get to go in like a straight hour and a half after everybody else.
Oh, nice.
So got there, sat in this room. There were like 200 people. It looks like in LA, it's the main courthouse. It looks like an airport terminal. There's just rows and rows and rows of seats, thankfully free Wi-Fi. And you're just sitting all day, sort of braced. And the very first group they called, they made an announcement before they said the names and was like, just so you know, this is for a 17-day trial.
Oof.
And if we call your name, you're not automatically going to be in it, but you'll be part of the jury pool for it. So like literally just the butts clenching of every person in this room. And you're like... And so, yeah, so they called. I did not get in that. And then they called. Then they broke for an hour and a half for lunch.
Wow.
I don't know why we're not all lawyers. And then they called like two more groups. And then they let everybody else go at around 4 o'clock. And I was like, cheers, cheers. But that said, I've served on like three juries. And as much as it's a pain and it's this like, it feels like this intrusion, I genuinely think people should embrace jury duty. Like find your inner earnest dork, because especially if you're a person who bitches about this system and about how the injustices that are perpetuated, and then you're also the person that's like, how can I get out of jury duty? No, you can't do both. Like, vote in municipal elections and do jury duty. You're either a citizen or you're not. And I was a super half-assed citizen because I got dismissed in 7 hours, but I still went, you guys. Jury duty.
I had something and I was like, I'm not, if I start talking about this, it's going to get way long. So I'm going to just say that we've also got writer, comedian, host of Max Fun's Tights and Fights, friend of the pod, Daniel Radford.
Hello.
Yay,
how you doing? What's good?
I am one of the writers for Screen Junkies Honest Trailers. We are
That's so cool.
Yeah, we are we got nominated for a Creative Arts Emmy for digital stuff, and I got my Emmy's dress and I love it. And
nice.
My goal is to make it so that people have to look at me like that 1 second longer to determine whether or not I'm Lizzo. That's my goal.
That's the dream.
That's nice.
I wonder what's good with Ify.
What's good with me? You know, nothing. Just the same old stuff. Apex Legends solos are done, so you know I don't get to drop solo. But that was fun. Outside of that, you know, the trailer for my good friend Timothée Chalamet's The King dropped.
Ify, you have to stop cyberbullying Timothée Chalamet. By the way,
Danielle saw the message I sent. So somewhere online, I saw someone who was like, oh, he's like showing that dong in this, and I was like, oh. So I immediately messaged him. I was like, hey Tim, you showing that thing? And he was like, what? And I was like, no. And I was like, oh, my bad. I was like, well, that's the next step in your artistic expression. So
stop bullying Timothée Chalamet.
I'll bully him until the end of time, until he stops responding to my messages.
Soon.
I mean, that's when I knew, like, he blew up. For anyone who doesn't know, I was in a short film with Timothy before he was Timothy. He was called Timothy.
Back when he was Timothy before he was Timothy.
Yeah, but he was Timothy then. But it was called Spinners. We shot it in Joshua Tree. And, like I was nerding out because I saw him in Homeland. And I was like, oh, you were the dick politician son in Homeland. And when we got in the car, he was like, we were driving up to Joshua Tree. And he's like, hey, yeah, I just had a meeting with Christopher Nolan. I was like, what? He was like, yeah, he wants me to be in some movie about space. And that's when he got on for Interstellar. And I was like, oh, cool. And then like we hung out once at Comic-Con. Then he came over. We watched like the finals a few months later, because you know we're like bi-coastal buds. You know, we'd see each other from time to time. And then it was that year where he's in like Booksmart. He was in what's the Greta Gerwig?
Lady Bird.
And then he was in the other. He called me by your name. Mm-hmm. And he was in one more movie. He was like in three movies.
Beautiful Boy. Yeah. Boy Erased. I got them confused. Beautiful Boy,
but that was the next year.
Oh, true.
But he was in like some period piece. But he had like three banger movies. He slipped. Literally, I remember like, because when I got the screener for Call Me By Your Name, I like sent him a video of me like watching it. And he was like, ah, yeah. And literally the next time I text him, his number has changed. I was like, oh, this is the ascension. And he's amazing. Like the insane. But I love him. If you're listening to this for some reason, keep killing it. all right, Tim, I'll see you when I see you.
go do jury duty, Timotei.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and Timotei was genuinely like, we got to hang out. I'm going to be in L.A.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. No, he's, yeah, it's
just don't ask funny. Him about that thing.
Oh, yeah, I'm always going to ask him about that thing. that just comes with being a friend of me.
That is true.
I'm going to ask you about that thing. On today's show, we'll be talking about John Carpenter's classic, They Live. We'll pitch our remake of the film in a new segment called Movie Redux. And as always, we've got our staff picks. But first up, we have Itadic. It's short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care?
I'll do the first one.
Ooh.
Eva Longoria is attached to direct a new film about the creation of Flamin' Hot Cheetos titled Flamin' Hot. The story follows the real-life account of Richard Montanez, a man who started as a janitor for Frito-Lay and invented the Flamin' Hot Cheeto in his spare time. I like to imagine that he did it on a blackboard, like yeah. Good Will Hunting
yes.
style. You get what I'm saying there. You got the visual. Montanez pitched the idea to Frito-Lay, eventually worked his way up to an executive at PepsiCo, where, side note to me, it means he's now one of them.
Yeah.
All right. Is this important? Do you care?
Yeah, I think it's like this is a fun biopic. It's mostly fun because it's only been talked about as the Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie. Like, I thought it was like an Angry Birds-esque movie
yes.
where they're like, we're going to take this IP and do something wild, but this is way more interesting.
I think it was a Deadline that fucked up that headline.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they're like, oh, it's the Cheetos movie. And it's like, okay, well, then everyone started dunking on it.
Yes.
And then people who were familiar with the movie and with the story were like, no, this is actually like a really awesome rags-to-riches story about, you know, about like a dude, and it's one of the few times we're going to get to see like a really awesome movie about Latinx folks.
Yeah.
So let's not be dicks.
Deadline. I had the exact same reaction to that headline. I was like, I, too, because of it, I thought it was going to be some dumb IP, and I'm like, holy crap, if I have to see Minion-style like, Cheetos come to life.
Oh, Chester Cheetah, like, he's cool. He got sunglasses.
You basically are Chester Cheetah.
Yeah, he's
so.
Like, yeah.
But like, if they did that version, I would vote for you to play Chester. But in this, I was disappointed when I read it, and I think that there's such a classism with that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Of belittling. It reminded me, do you remember the Jennifer Lawrence Joy movie about that woman who, like, was, I think, a single mother housewife, and then she invented all of this stuff and sold it on QVC and became this huge...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that one was just dismissed as like, oh, it's the QVC mop lady.
Yeah.
And there's something, and like, you're like, no, that's who we should be holding things up to, like whether or not they do great things with their riches after the fact, which I have no idea if they do, but like that's literally the American dream, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like it's total personal innovation, entrepreneurship. It's people using nothing but their own resources and smarts. Like,
yeah, it's amazing how a movie like The Founder, which is literally about some dude who sees someone else's shit, makes it poppin' and cuts them out. That's great, and everyone's super excited about that. But we've got to call this the Hot Cheetos movie.
Yeah.
But we didn't call that the McDonald's Steely movie.
Yeah.
It was basically Hamburglar the film.
Yeah.
And no one called it that.
That was the Founder was the wildest movie because like watching it, it was like, this isn't a good person. Like, why would you make this movie? Like, I'm not like, it makes me not want to eat at McDonald's anymore because you're making a movie where it's like, yeah, he stole it.
Well, that's a different, that's an anti-hero. Whereas this, yeah. It's like, I'm kind of excited about a modern day hero.
Yeah.
Richard Montanez, like, I know. Whom I've never heard
which
of.
Which is funny. Yeah. I even
and
had
that we'll
a
get to.
Very fire tweet before I knew this. Very fire tweet where I said,
Flamin' hot tweet?
Flamin'
girl,
hot tweet.
It was right there
where
for
I
the
said,
take.
If,
I had to. I apologize.
If I don't get to pin the Funyuns movie, I'm firing my whole team. But this was before I knew this was a great biopic, which, yeah, like, the word biopic wasn't mentioned. It was just like the Hot Cheetos movie.
Yeah.
It really, and I think you're really onto something where it is being thrown away unnecessarily.
Danielle, do you want to tell us about our next news item?
Oh, wow, I really do. All right.
I figured.
I love you. Miley Cyrus and the Penis Cake. All actions have consequences. Like when you lick a penis-shaped cake that you bought for your boyfriend's birthday and it gets you kicked off of a popular children's animated film. Miley Cyrus apparently learned this lesson back in 2012 with the film Hotel Transylvania. You're fine, Miley. Cyrus went on a bit of a tweeting spree lately, because she's defending herself, after the dissolution of her marriage to Liam Hemsworth, the second best Hemsworth. And she cataloged some moments that cost her opportunities in the past. That's when she tweeted out, I lost a massive Walmart deal at 17 for ripping a bong, and I got kicked off of Hotel Transylvania for buying Liam a penis cake for his birthday and licking it. Is this important? Do you care?
I think this is interesting.
Yeah,
I don't
interesting.
Think it's important.
It's, yeah.
What's
it's funny
the
as
most
shit.
Interesting thing to me, like, speaking of how headlines can be misleading and how people take in such a small amount of information, mm-hmm. or they get their news in such small pieces and then just kind of contextualize themselves. So TMZ actually covered this in 2012 when it happened, and it wasn't just that she licked this penis cake, because you're like, that seems pretty benign.
Yeah.
It's that she did it while, like, 19 and was at a bar, and then they also had photos and, like, just ideas that she was out drinking illegally and doing, and she was part of a kids movie. So, and then the photos with the cake where she published herself and stuff. So,
and it's also, it's Miley licking a cake. Miley, she real dirty.
Yeah.
she a real dirty bird.
Yeah. Well, she was like still a teenager. She was legal, but
yeah, it was the point
not
where
a
she
girl,
was trying
not yet
to
a woman.
Yeah. She was trying to, like, break out her sign. I still think it's bullshit. Anytime, like, any of, like, oh, this because a kids movie. I often think about Bob Saget.
Exactly.
Like,
great
and I feel
example.
Like I feel like women always is like, you gotta keep it under wraps. But when you think, like, and it was funny because I didn't know about Bob Saget's comedy until, like, after the fact. But, like, he was, like, referencing, like, Full House shit when he was, like, saying some of the dirty stuff, and he was still, like, hailed as, like, America's Funniest Home Video. And I oftentimes try not to jump down anyone's throat. Also, like, I'm very sex positive. I'm very into, like I think, like, seriously, if you like, you know, seeing beautiful women be sexy, you should also be sex positive. But, like, to me, it always does feel like women get the short end of that stick. And, like, I'm always under the guise of,
and,
like,
we hate the short end of the stick.
Yeah.
No, it's not the short end of the stick. It's the motion of the ocean.
Sure. So it's how well the short end of the stick can eat.
Stop. I did that. That was on me.
Yeah, we went down there.
I agree with you, and I do want to amend mine of that.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a correct decision on their part.
Oh, yeah, no, I get what you were saying.
But I think
it's a larger thing.
It's more that, like, photos were published and how that's changed, like, what studios think is permissive. Because a lot of these do have clauses. That's the way she would have gotten out of it is, like,
oh,
it 100%. Was Sony, so it wasn't Disney, but it was still a kids movie.
Yeah.
I'm trying to see who the bootleg person was that replaced her in Hotel Transylvania.
Oh,
Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez, that's what I thought.
Oh, there you go. Poor Selena.
I mean, not
she's
how dare you call, because
so
that
much.
Is a 100% what her ticket was. That's how Selena Gomez rose to fame. She was the stand-in Miley until Miley went in.
Selena Gomez is a star. Anyway,
I love Selena.
Moving
Selena,
on.
Hit these DMs up if you're listening. I support you. All right, well, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking about They Live just as soon as we hear from another one of the shows on Maximum Fun.
Hi, I'm Dave Hill from Show Business. And while I'm not from Canada, my grandfather, Clarence Vincent Blake Sr., was, and he wouldn't shut up about it. My grandfather moved on to that great penalty box in the sky way back in the 80s. Still, all these years later, I can't help but wonder, what do we really know about Canada and its people? Which is why my friend Chris Gersbeck and I decided to make So, You're Canadian. Brand new podcast from the Maximum Fun Network, on which I attempt to get to know our neighbors to the north, one Canadian at a time. Coming to Maximum Fun, August 27th. And I'm not sorry.
Welcome back to Who Shot Ya? I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Danielle Radford.
And today we're talking about They Live. And first, we're going to start off with a storyline from IMDb. Nada, a down-on-his-luck construction worker, discovers a pair of special sunglasses. Wearing them, he is able to see the world as it really is, people being bombarded by media and government with messages like, stay asleep, no imagination, submit to authority. Even scarier is that he is able to see that some, usually normal-looking people, are in fact ugly aliens in charge of the massive campaign to keep humans subdued.
This is,
I know, dun, they dun, live. It's so funny because, like, this is the most, like, when did this movie come out? I want to say 80s, right?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like the most 80s movie, and people still so unironically like to, like, be like, we're living in They Live right now.
Oh, I did myself the favor before watching it of watching the trailer on YouTube. Shouldn't have done that. Shouldn't have went down that hole, because at the end of that hole, just like every conspiracy, are Jewish people, and I should have known
no,
better.
No, you looked at the comments?
Yo, I did.
Girl!
I read comments. I have ADD, so I read comments
Never.
While I scroll. It was a mistake. The internet was a mistake.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Also, the irony of that there's conspiracies behind They Live is the beautiful subtextual metaphor of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, literally, so many people online are like, oh, well, you know that they're talking about Jewish folks. It's like, I don't think they
I
are.
I do think John Carpenter made a statement about how that wasn't what it was.
And so did Ronnie several yeah. times. He was like, no, I'm talking about bourgeois consumerism and like everything
talking
else.
About Reaganomics, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so, that's when you know you, when like, that's when you truly jump the shark, when the creator has to be like, guys, seriously, stop
yeah, like,
it.
I'm not as fucked up as you are.
Yeah, leave me alone.
Don't bring your brain worms into this.
Yeah, oh yeah. My gosh.
This one, so I saw this when I was a wee child, and it was at a time when I was watching a lot of, like, I was watching Night of the Living Dead and yeah. a lot of horror, and so I found it really, like, meh, because mm-hmm. It's there's not a lot of action. There's one very long fist fight.
Yeah.
But there's not, you know, it's not an action film. It's not super a horror film. The aliens, there's a grossness to them, but not necessarily a fright.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I just remember being like disappointed by it. I certainly wasn't looking for any subtext. And so rewatching it as an adult is, it's interesting because he's trying to do a lot with this.
Yes.
But one of the reviews that I read that I don't know if I fully agree with because I think he's a little more successful, but it was he's trying to dig deep. Carpenter's trying to dig deep with a toy shovel. And I was like, oh, that's almost it because there's so much here. Any director would be hard-pressed to really get to the root of that.
Well, and so we follow a hero/anti-hero who is nothing but a catchphrase factory.
Yeah.
There is nothing else about him. It's just him saying catchphrases or quoting literal colloquialisms or like cliches. That's it.
Because here's the thing. It's the 80s, and I always, when I remember who is opposite of Piper in this, I always want to say Carl Weathers, but it's my man's Keith David.
And it's Keith yeah. David looking badass.
Right! That's the thing. It's like swole Keith David.
I did not know I was meant to be having lustful thoughts about Keith David this whole time.
Wait, Gargoyles didn't
too?
Tell you that?
Oh. Oof. And then I watched them all too young.
Yeah.
Seeing it now is with a woman's eye.
Ooh, I mean, and so like that's why. So I went back because it always like because you remember the 80s were Carl Weathers' like sexiest moments, but Keith David slid in here
he really
with
did.
The voice and the buffness.
No, he's
and Yeah, I
and his bald head.
Oh gosh,
I mean,
so and yeah, it was. That's the one thing too that seeing some of the pictures and seeing it again is like, yeah, the aliens do look pretty creepy, like with the face.
It's a lot worse at the end when they're in color.
Oh yeah,
when they're in color, it's like that's when it becomes like Fright Show, like Fright Night.
But it, I think, you know, hearing you really nail it home, it is the thing where, like, I'm a scaredy cat and I can just casually watch They Live, which means it's not scary. That means it's because
I'm a total I'm not, horror is like, not my bag.
I couldn't make it through Scary Stories with open eyes. I think I got tricked into opening my eyes towards the end of Hereditary and then stapled my eyes shut for the rest of my life. But this
more
movie,
like her bed is scary.
Oh man.
Oh, girl.
Yeah. Sorry, that was my favorite bad writing joke of film Twitter forever. It makes me so happy.
But yeah, then but like They Live, you know, I describe it as a romp. It's like the exploration of this idea of this secret alien society, and you get one nice thick long action scene in the middle that just goes on for way too long.
Well, and that is like, that's the whole movie. Yeah. All of these scenes go on for at least a minute or two longer than we need them to. Did the grocery store scene need to go on that long? No. He was like, I'm sorry, he was padding that movie to get, because without that, it's like the 40s Dumbo where it's like a 60-minute jaunt.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing is this is Carpenter at his peak Banksy. He's like, I got something to say, y'all.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna let this scene sit so y'all can think. Well, so y'all can think.
Open up your third eye.
Yeah. That's where it comes back to that digging deep with the toy shovel.
Yeah.
He does have something very legitimate to say about capitalism and the idea of how marketing and the media has brainwashed us, and that the people, there's a really interesting line at the end that apparently was taken from real life that an executive said to him of the world's gonna end for everyone, like you might as well be a sellout.
Oh yeah, we all sell out,
you might as well profit from it essentially. And like that is a really interesting concept. It's his approach to each thing that seems awkward. The other thing in rewatching it this time, I was so cognizant. So he, you know, he finds these magical sunglasses, as you will, and puts them on, and they allow him to see, it reveals the underworld. It's like the Matrix, he gets to take the pill, but just like for moments at a time. So he he sees the Matrix, takes the glasses off, he sees real, other way around. Anyway, when he does that, he sees a bunch of people that are these secret aliens. He doesn't comment or do anything until he runs into women aliens. And then he berates an old woman for how ugly she is.
Yep.
And then he kicks another woman. And then he kidnaps a third woman.
Goodness well, look, gracious. that is his line. It was fine when the dudes were ugly as fuck because he don't want to do nothing with them. But as soon as you take away his hot ladies, we got a squab.
It's a problem.
But then I also, I'd love to hear more of your ideas on him and an anti-hero, because he's set up as such a traditional American hero, right? Like the loner that comes to town. It's in Westerns. It's in noir. It's this guy who's going to come to town and set things right. Except for A, I get to immediately see him treat women poorly.
Yeah.
And B, so he has these, what he thinks are magic glasses. He puts them on. He sees messages and like that people look secretly like fleshless skeletons that are so bloody somehow.
Yeah.
Just gross. His reaction to that, he immediately kills cops that look like that. And
grabs
he kills
a gun.
Other people.
Doesn't ask
grabs
questions.
A gun. No. Does, there's no let me get to the bottom of this, or perhaps I consumed a substance that has made my mind go wild.
Yeah. Or even just maybe the obey and stuff is weird, but how do I know that these dudes aren't helping us fight someone else?
Right.
There's no curiosity.
Yeah.
First thing he does is, and I'm sorry, this was kind of hard for me to watch in 2019. First thing he does is grab a gun and start shooting people in a bank.
Yes.
And that was
there were so many people in that bank.
Yeah.
I got that shiver to me.
And I know that he was shooting aliens and we're supposed to infer that they're bad, but it's all, you said, it's very surface level. It doesn't get into the meat of it.
Yeah. I mean, but that generally comes to my major kind of just gripe with all the meat left on the table, because there is an interesting world. We don't find out when the evasion happened, what kind of is the motivation behind it. And I think that's the thing, is like, we're so caught up in trying to say these fun quick catchphrases and live in these deep moments that we really don't explore this world that we built, because it is an interesting world. Like, what is that like if you finally get a look into a world that no one else can see? And yeah, it really is like, you know, same thing. Like, that's the kind of thing with that super long fight scene. It's like, after like the 5-minute mark, I'd be like, all right, let me just put on these glasses so this dude can stop fighting.
Oh my god, can you please stop fucking punching me?
Yeah. And to clarify for anyone who hasn't seen it, this fight scene, and it's really well choreographed. Yeah. It is just Rowdy Roddy Piper and hot Keith David, mano a mano. Sorry, from Minnesota, and they are just like fist fighting, but like true Marvel superhero style. Like the hits that would clock you out for days are just, they shake off in seconds.
Oh yeah,
but for like, it's a 5.5 or 6 minute sequence, and the purpose of it, the whole thing, is that Roddy wants him to try on these glasses and be like, I swear, things, you can see things. And Keith is like, you know what, instead of that, let's just keep brawling. Like, you're just
in
not
just let Roddy queer eye you and put on the stupid glasses.
Right, like, what? No, and yeah. Because, what did you think of that fight scene?
Okay, so it's fun because there's a couple moments of like suplexes and other things where it's like, get it? Because he's a wrestler that you like. And so they threw that stuff in, and it's fan service, and that's great. The fight, this is going to sound really weird. Really, really weird.
It's a safe space.
I don't like fight scenes very much. And I know that sounds preposterous coming from me.
What's because the name of your podcast again?
Tights and Fights. It is a podcast about wrestling specifically. I don't like fight scenes that much. This was a very well choreographed one, and so I like it more than I like most. But for the most part, they're not really my bag. Like, what I like about wrestling isn't that it's two dudes punching each other, or else I would be really into like MMA or other things. What I like is, I do like the choreographedness of this. My favorite part of that fight scene is the part where Roddy accidentally like hits the dude's car window and has that real moment where he like kind of giggles and he's like, oh shit, I'm sorry.
That's the best part. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that was the thing, is just lots of moments like that where, you know, and I'm the biggest proponent of like letting things be in movies just because it's cool. Like, I'm the biggest
heart
person.
Same. I don't feel the need to justify everything.
But like, when your whole movie is just doing things because it's cool, it just kind of, especially when there's just such a richness there, I feel like the movie ends and you learn nothing about the world, and even like kind of the story, all you kind of learn is the message. Like that's what has an arc, is this message that we've been trying to get, which is like, we're all zombies, man.
open your eyes, sheep. And at the end, there's titties.
Yeah.
Okay, the fact that happened, literally the last shot of it is a large-breasted woman having sex with someone who's revealed to be an alien. I was like gasping. I'm like, I cannot believe you were like, hell or high water, we will get tits in this thing. And we did. Iffy, you picked this one. It's like, because, you know, it's sort of, we're in a weird little week of releases.
Yeah.
What was it about you that wanted to like revisit it or dig into it?
Well, I thought it was like, you know, a fun movie because I knew we were going to have Danielle. So it features a wrestler. And also just, I wanted to revisit something that's just old and light. And, you know, nothing real deep to talk about, because it's like, and
there's so much deep depth to this.
Yeah. There's as much depth as there is in a Stussy S that I drew on my Trapper Keeper. but like, you know, like I, and also it's just kind of fun because it is that parallel of like, this could be made now, but like, hopefully the version that's made now is a lot deeper. But like, it is kind of like that general idea of like, you know, the 1-2 punch of like, what we're paying attention to versus what's really being sold to us. That's interesting. And that idea, as like whatever as the movie may be in retrospect, that idea is always fun to me. The secret society of it all, and just the imagery of like, you're around spooky people all around. There's always snakes in the grass.
Or you don't always know what people have inside them.
Yes.
That idea too.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just mentioned this because this starred a wrestler, and you guys have informed me because we brought up like the idea of wrestlers who've turned to acting, and mm-hmm. I was like, "There's two."
Yeah.
And then they laughed in my faces because A, I said two, and then B, I followed it by saying The Rock and John Cena, and then I was informed that is not how you say
John Cena.
Sure, sure. Which, big star.
By the way, yeah, it's funny because like John Cena, I think, is still in transition, and I think that's partly because he's like still within the company.
Yeah, he's still doing favors for Vince.
Dwayne has turned his back on wrestling. He's like, I am a movie star now. I'm best friends with Kevin Hart.
He doesn't have time anymore, and he's probably getting to the point where people won't insure him if he does too much stuff in the ring.
Oh yeah. 1,000%
Yes, insurance. Girl after my own heart. So you laughed in my face and were like, there are so many and every one of them
well,
you're going to know.
Not so many, but there are at least two movies because we wanted to find out like what are the best wrestler turned actor movies.
Yeah. Okay.
There are two that I'm going to say and I'm very excited to see your reaction.
I'm holding on to my butt.
Blade Runner 2049 and Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, Drax.
Dave Bautista.
You're right. Fair. I love that guy.
And those are actual, like, good prestige movies.
He was also in Skyfall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are, like, good prestige movies.
You're so right, because I was so ready to just kind of lean on, because I really thought Cena did great in Trainwreck.
He did.
I loved him as Blockers.
Because with me...
Yeah,
Blockers is good, but the thing I like about Trainwreck is Cena, if you don't know, within wrestling is like the family-friendly guy. He's the kid's kid. And so for him to do such a dirty role in that's always going to get me. You know, as much as I was like dunking on Bob Saget, I love when like someone who's supposed to be family-friendly goes and does the dirty thing because it's like they're tapping into something. Almost like why I really like The Farewell, where you have someone like Awkwafina who's known as comedy,
yeah.
and they flip it on... And they're like, no, drama. Or Jim Carrey and what was it? The
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind?
That one is the one I actually saw, and I was getting ready to reference a movie I did not see, which was like Room something.
There's also like Number 23. I don't know. I think that's the one I was thinking.
But yeah, I just... But Batista, yeah, he has, I think, the most prestigious...
It's so weird. It's like literally he is making the best pick of like movies. He clearly is like, oh, I made my money.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's made a fifth of what either of those other dudes we mentioned have made just from wrestling. He's made his money, but he didn't make as much as anyone else
has. But I feel like
those guys to have. He did pretty well. But he's definitely like, oh, I'm happy with the amount of money I want. I just want to do stuff that's interesting to me.
I think it's definitely going to go to Batista because he definitely has, like, he only had one misstep, which even that misstep I enjoyed, which was the Man with the Iron Fist, the Kung Fu movie made by the RZA.
You were a fan of Stuber?
Did you see Stuper?
Mm-mm. Stuper's so much better than people say.
Really?
It's marketed so stupidly.
Oh, yeah.
They shot themselves in the foot with that marketing. And it's actually a really charming, funny comedy.
Oh, man.
All right. You heard it here first.
Yeah,
it's a bummer.
First.
Get it at Redbox.
Yeah.
Because that's only, 2 weeks away before it's at Redbox. It's been long out of theaters, even dollar theaters, I'm sure. But no, like Stuper's actually really good.
All right. So that maybe ups Bautista's love casting chances.
Yeah. We'll see. All right. So, for our final review for the They Live, would you screen it, stream it, or skip it?
Oh, I mean, watch it with your buds at a party and watch it with buds who aren't going to talk all the way through, but who are definitely going to at least give you some quality MST3King.
Yeah.
And because there's enough space, there's not a lot of dialogue in this movie.
Yeah. That's fair.
That's very true.
I'm also a stream it. I don't think you can screen this anyway, but it's more a stream it for me. I do think it's a good film to have in your film vocabulary. And I also think that there's a lot of stuff that's successful here in terms of questions raised, whether or not they're always executed as well. But I think it's fun. I love John Carpenter anyway, and I think it's nice to see other sides of what he was trying to be doing.
But still the same synth, baby.
Yeah, don't let go of that synth.
Give me your key card.
I'm going to go with screen it, but almost under the same philosophy. If you can go to like a rescreening of this where you're just going to be in a house packed with like wrestling marks and like 80s movies super fans who are just going to hoot and holler during all this, where you're going to have big cheers throughout that 6-minute fight scene. I think that's going to be a fun experience because I'm all for that. All for rescreening experiences. I went to go see Rocky Horror Picture Show with my mother, and I remember her one complaint was she didn't like that everyone was talking through the movie. I was like, oh, Mom, you didn't know what this was about, huh?
That's your fault.
Please never tell me how old you were when you went to Rocky Horror. Do not. You're going to want to, but don't.
All right.
I'm picturing you at a variety of ages.
Okay, so I'm gonna let your mind just wander then.
Just let it percolate.
It was last year.
All right. Well, we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun.
Welcome, everyone, to the live wrestling spectacular in Los Angeles.
So far, the world's most boring wrestling podcast has been destroying the competition.
Isn't there anyone who can save us from this travesty?
Wait, could it be?
It's Tights and Fights, the perfect wrestling podcast.
Tights and Fights is here to save us from the monotony of boring wrestling podcasts with hilarious conversations.
Woke trips through the history of wrestling.
And joke about the finer points of people wearing spandex.
What a match!
And the Tights and Fights podcast will be back every week.
Thursdays on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts. Please, these hosts have families.
Tights and Fights podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Who Shot You? I'm your host, Iffy Whiteyway. In the studio with me are
Danielle Radford,
Drea Clark.
And today we're doing a new segment called Movie Redux. It's our opportunity to pitch a remake of a classic film. We'll recast and rework the film to our liking. And today we're going to start with the film we just watched, They Live. But Drea wanted to posit a question.
I do.
Before we even get started.
I'm excited about this because this is development. This is one of my favorite parts of producing,
ooh,
which is, you know, you're at your story creation stage. You're getting your original ideas. You're getting options on IP. You're thinking of how to finesse them. And for me, if anything that I was doing, and you guys are now, of course, my producing partners in this, so all royalties will be split by us, not evenly, but, you know, just that's okay. I'm just going to take advantage of all of this. No. But the idea of, I think for a recreation, a reboot, a sequel, whatever, what you need to look at is the fundamental question. And for this one, I think it's even more specific, which is, if you're looking at They Live and we're doing a modern interpretation, what do we think they are currently hiding and that most people still have blinders on about? Because that's the coolest part of They Live, to me, the like most resonant and what would transfer is what is underneath the surface that is messing with our whole system. And some people see, but so many do not.
I have a weird theory.
Oh, I'm excited.
Which, and then I'll preface this with, I love comic books. I loved comic books. I love the MCU. I love all of them. But I do think that a lot of MCU movies and superhero movies, it's very much about how, like, the rich dude who can do everything is good.
Ooh.
It's very much like, oh, the Elon, you know, private, we need private heroes, not the government. We need private citizens to step in and save us. We need, let's privatize everything. Because when we let the government do it, they're going to mess it up and they can't be trusted. And like, yeah, a lot of them can't. But it's also like, we should fund NASA instead of like having Elon Musk send people to the moon. And also, there is an idea of, you know, the strongest among us will step in and save us.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true.
Yeah, I think I like that because I was trying to think of something, but I only want to plus one that because I like, because it does feel like there's this weird, like, it seems like every other day there's like a rich person who's like, oh man, I'll do this. And people are like, yeah, why don't Bezos, he can fix, you know, he can fix Flint 10 times over. And it's like, yeah, he can and he should, but he also shouldn't have to. Like, we should have a system in place.
He also should just pay taxes.
Taxes.
That Amazon apparently hasn't paid for a couple of years now from whatever loopholes.
Yeah.
If he was paying those, then other people who were, like, voted or elected into those positions could decide where to put their money instead of it just being this one guy. I like that, because you were thinking of Ozymandias in Watchmen. Is that one
little,
of the ones you're thinking
little
of
bit,
too?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, obviously I've been watching The Boys, and so I don't, not necessarily like the sponsorships and superheroes are really evil deep inside because they don't exist, but more so the idea that, like, they, you know, you, and I don't think it's deliberate.
Yeah.
Because that's just the way that superhero comics have always worked, is that, like, hey, if we believe in the goodness of people, there will be people out there. It essentially, it's supposed to be the, like, you know, the Fred, you know, it's supposed to be like the Fred Rogers, you know, look for the helpers thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I do think that sometimes it can be like, you know, oh, like, how many people were saying Elon Musk is like Tony Stark?
Yeah.
And we allowed that to blind us to what a piece of shit he is.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Elon Musk is great. I'm just kidding. I'm every person on Twitter.
But also, I think to, you know, weave this into the story, I think what's fun is, yeah, I think that would be cool that, like, the people pulling the strings behind that, the big reveal at the end, are rich people, because then we get the ability to play with the idea that, you know, based on expectation of what the original was about, everyone's going to think it's aliens. Everyone's going to think it's aliens. And then at the end, reveal that, no, this is human-made, and the face melting is an effect of the technology to hide what's actually going on.
So, like, they have all sort of portrait of Dorian Gray themselves.
Yeah.
Given up their souls. They're, like, looking more and more horrible, but you can't see it.
Yeah.
Because of
the
idea of...
Maybe they brought de-aging into the real world.
Yeah.
Yes, and they have the money for it. I like the... And that is exactly the kind of thing we spend money on, is, like, boners and how to keep looking young forever. Yeah. But... So I do enjoy a sci-fi that the whole thought is that someone, you know, who gets the first glasses, because I do think the glasses are important. I think we have to keep...
Yeah.
Also,
they're
they were
iconic.
A stylish Ray-Ban. Yeah. They still look good now. We get it sponsored, no problem. But I like the glasses as revealing, like, oh, this is what's under the surface and what's really happening. But and that the implication to them was like, oh, this must be an alien story. I do like a third act twist of, no, actually, this is a rich people's story. Because that's true. The other things, because I was looking at the original, They Live is so much about, in Carpenter's own words, Reaganomics. And, like, trickle down economics, you know, sexy stuff like that. And, like, how... Looking back now, we have the hindsight of saying it did not work. Like, our national debt, like, kablooied the income gap. That's where that whole division between, like, starting to lose the middle class and whatever. And I think if you did a sequel to it or a reboot of They Live, you would need to really stress to me, like, the income gap is something.
Yeah. Yes.
So if we're incorporating that, especially if we have, you know, who knew rich people as villains? But, you know, it's very... a today kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who are we casting in our in our sexy class destroying feature?
So this is where it definitely gets hard, because there's the brain of me, and Danielle's gonna know exactly what I'm trying to do right away when you hear when she hears this. But the brain in me that's like, one, I definitely want to try and gender swap it.
That's what I did. I have yep.
But I also wanted, like, stay true and go with a wrestler. And that's why...
No.
Yep. Ronda Rousey.
You know, she is awful. So we could tie that into some of that, like, anti-hero-ness of, like, yeah, this person might be doing the right thing, but they're also, like, not a good human.
I like...
And also, like, sorry, if this movie is about, like, tearing down with our ideas of heroes... we shouldn't have a hero that's perfect. Like, there shouldn't be one shining example of a perfect hero, because the idea would be, like, you know, not everything is black and white.
Ooh, I like that. I was going a total different direction where to me, but I like your take better. I was going for more of a shining hero, and that I was like, well, to me, the people who are the bellwethers of pointing these things out are black women.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I would be interested in a black female protagonist in this who's pointing out all of these things. And just instead of people just trying on the fucking glasses, keeps getting fist fought about it.
Yeah.
Because that seemed like right on track.
Oh, yeah.
That is
but there is something more interesting. So what if you combine both of those? Because I hadn't really thought of Roddy Piper's character as being a true anti-hero until you were talking about it. And he really is. And that's something to dive deeper into. So if you had an anti-hero and then partnered up with someone, because Keith David's a good dude just all around, right?
Yeah.
So then, because
he just wants to stop getting punched in the face.
Yeah. So then you can still partner up with this, maybe a black woman who has been through it. A Latina woman, like just someone who's been on the front lines being like,
oh, yeah.
Hi, I don't know why you guys need glasses. This stuff is pretty obvious to me.
Yeah.
But here, I've got you these glasses. Please just put them on. Oh, you'll only do it after you fight
me. What would be a fun spin, and this is where like the people tuning in who's like, more of this liberal bullshit, would be the fun of like that person was an activist, but it's almost in this like, one step forward fantasy world of them finally having like the smoking gun, you know, like that would be interesting to see someone who's been already fighting the fight but couldn't really hold everyone's attention.
Yeah.
And then they're like, this is what it is.
Oh, and maybe that's why you have someone terrible like a Rhonda or like that character, because that character can be the one that's like, oh, people will actually fucking listen to you. They haven't listened to us
yes.
for years.
Yeah.
But because they'll listen to you.
That's also part of the truth. Ooh, ooh, I like this. You guys were so good. Deep thoughts with toy shovels. That could be our production, our LLC.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I feel good about the shape of this, you guys.
Oh.
I really do. Ah, oh, good. Okay, well, I can't wait to make all these big, big money. They livered.
Yeah, yeah.
They live.
They continue to live.
They're living. Do we want to like pin a opposite to Rhonda before we end this segment? I was trying to think.
Oh, I personally, because who I cast as my lead in the first one, because I love her and think she should be in everything, is Danai Gurira.
I love
her.
She's
pin
so
down.
Good.
Yep, there
like,
it is.
Because she's someone that I would like, oh yeah, this woman tells me, like, she's someone who would say the words, come with me if you want to live, and I'd be like, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Leave me out of here. I mean, wherever she goes.
I'm just sold on the idea of, like, just seeing that interaction, because I can see it now in my head of Rhonda raising the gun and Danai putting the hand down, like, what are you doing?
What is happening?
Like, just, she has such a, like, incredulous, like, face that she could just be like, what? All right, there it is. So go ahead and make that poster for us. They live in. I'm just kidding. But now, it is time for staff picks. It can be any movie, in theaters, streaming, or what have you. Danielle, why don't you start?
There's something that was in the 80s that was very big, and they were called Canon Films. Canon Films were the ones who brought us the lesser Supermans. They brought us Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, as well as Breakin' 1. They brought us the Masters of the Universe movie, and they were two just nutso dudes who were buying these things for no money and then making them for less money. In fact, if you've ever seen Masters of the Universe, in the last scene, the reason why it's so dark is because they were literally like creditors, people they owed money to, were cutting the electricity while they're fighting. So there's a documentary about this time called Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films. I believe it is still streaming on Netflix. And I highly recommend it.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. If you want to hear about just a gonzo, nutso studio who would take these popular properties and then do everything wrong at every turn. And it's, I don't want to spoil anything. Just go and watch it and be amazed.
Ooh.
Okay, I love it. I thought you were just going to talk about like the film canon, and it really threw me for a loop.
Oh.
That was a fun twist.
Well, that was what my joke is always, that like, you know, the name canon is the only time they ever cared about canon.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they were not aiming for it.
Nope.
Yeah.
All right. Andrea, do you have a pick?
I do have a pick. So this is one that I think it had limited release last weekend, so I only just got to see it. And it's incredible. It's called Tigers Are Not Afraid. It's directed by Issa Lopez, whom I believe did an episode of Switchblade Sisters. And it blew my mind. Like, I'd heard a lot of great things about it from critics that I trust and other festival programmers. It started on the festival circuit, I think, at the end of 2017. It's just getting released now. It's set in Mexico. It follows a young girl who ends up being brought into this pack of like four or five other sort of orphaned kids. And it's all in this land of like cartels and drug wars and the violence that comes with that. But there is a really beautifully executed sense of magical realism to it, a slight shade of horror. It's fantasy in a really dark way that reflects back to reality. And if you don't want to take my word for it, though, you should. Some of the people that have come out swinging for it are like Guillermo del Toro and Stephen King and Neil Gaiman and people who know what they're talking about. So Tigers Are Not Afraid. Again, I think it's still in limited release, but this is the kind of film that really needs box office support. So if it's out near you, please see it. And if it's not, I hope people do rent it when it's finally available in their neck of the woods. It's also on Shudder now, so you should check it out that way and support it and spread the word.
And for mine, it's Iffy with the Wild Staff pick yet again this week. No different. I mentioned it earlier, and, you know, I think you should check it out. You know, it has 5.4 out of 10 on IMDb, 51% on Rotten Tomatoes, 51% on Metacritic. It's, for me, a fun romp. I love the passion that went into it. It is the RZA's directorial debut, The Man with the Iron Fist, with such an all-star cast as RZA as the lead, Russell Crowe, Lucy Liu, Eli Roth, Dave Bautista, Rick Yoon, Kung Lee. I'm talking about, my man's went and casted more Asian actors in a film that takes place in Asia than most Hollywood movies. So that that alone should get you to check it out. You know, you also have Jamie Chung, Brian Mann, Daniel Wu, Zuzu, Grace Wang, Gordon Liu, Andrew Lin. He did not play games. He did not come to whitewash this film except for his black character who was a slave and is now, for some reason, in ancient China.
Sure.
As a blacksmith. I rock with it. It's you know, I mean, it's you watch it with the same level you would watch any like old school kung fu movie. I mean, if you know anything about Wu-Tang Clan and the RZA, he's obsessed with kung fu movies, and you really do get that passion that he has in making it. It's almost when like you do see a movie that you're like, oh man, you're too much of a fan of this to like really critically chop down and you know, make a like concise, clear vision. But all in all, it was pretty, it's fun. That's how I'll describe it. And my favorite part is if you watch to the end, there's a sequence they include that you can tell happened after they ran out of money. And it is very, very, very...
After their creditors started pulling the lights?
Oh, yeah. Oh, 1,000%. You, like, it's, there's a bird flap. I'm going to see if I can find it and show you after we're done recording. But The Man with the Iron Fist, check it out. I just found out there was a sequel that dropped, so I'm 1,000% going to check that out and probably recommend it next week. So now it's time for our five-star reviews, and if you leave us a five-star review, we'll read it on the air. And this one, no different. Good cast. Dear Sassy and Astute Review Squad, wanted to send some love your way for this tight 60-minute gem. Casey, to which Casey was like, it's supposed to be 45. Always fresh and thoughtful, Ricky's departure has left the show in just as capable and entertaining hands. Itadick has to be the best news segment in the podcast game. A second helping of Who Shot You? Yes, please. Alonzo, you have a good radio voice. Iffy, you have comedy game. Drea always has me seeing with new perspective. April, rest in peace. Your fantastic F-bombs.
Oh, well, I gave those to you guys this episode.
She was our F-bomb ringer.
Yeah, yeah. Came through. So it's not going forever.
I never get to do them on my shows except for Tights and Fights, so I like to get them in where I can.
All right. Well, thank you, Danielle, for coming on. You were a treat, a gem. All of the above.
A snack with two C's.
Thank you. Where can people find you?
Again, you can find me on my Max Fun podcast about wrestling, Tights and Fights. You can also find me on Fandom, which used to be Screen Junkies News. It's still a part of the Screen Junkies family, where we talk about movies and entertainment news, mostly movies. You can find me there at least 3 days a week. You can also watch the Honest Trailers, because that is how I get paid, and also the Honest Trailer commentaries.
Ooh, all right. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at WhoShotYaPod. Our Facebook group can be found at facebook.com/groups/WhoShotYaPodcast, or send us an email at WhoShotYa@MaximumFun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.